way. And it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Jim.
Thank you. Thank you. Wow. All right. Oh. Hey, everybody. I really appreciate everybody coming tonight. I'm going to kind of get ready here in just a second. Wow. First of all, I want to thank all my friends here. I want to thank the newcomers here. Can we give them a big round of applause? It takes a lot of people pulling your arm to get to your first meeting. Or in my case, it took a lot of people to get here, my first meeting. I do want to mention that we do have a new president, but I'm not promoting or anything here. I just want it on the tape that I'm the first speaker at this meeting with a new president. So if I screw anything up, it ain't my fault. I really want to thank the people that I've known for 2 years here. They've changed my life. They've given me a new hope in this program that I could live my life without alcohol. And I'm very grateful and very thankful to all those people. I'm thankful for all of you showing up here tonight, every one of you. And it takes a lot to get here. And I'm just thankful you're here to keep me sober tonight. I appreciate that. I'm Jim. I'm Uncle Jim. I'm Just Jim. I'm Two Beard Jim. And I'm grateful, Jim. And I got all these names. I go by them all. And somebody the other night at a Sunday night meeting said, "So really, you're Uncle Just Grateful Two Beard Jim?" And I'm like, "You got it. That sounds good to me." And that's who I am today. I have to keep that in mind to remember that I'm an alcoholic, and to remember that I guess the incomprehensible demoralization is just one beer away from me. It's just one beer away. I see it on TV every day when I look at a beer, and I'm going, "Damn, look at that! That person bought a bottle of wine or a six pack," and I'm thinking, "I could drink all that. That'd be delicious." And I have to remind myself that one is never enough, and that all of it until I black out is just about the right amount. And it's hard every day, but it's not hard every day actually anymore, but I'm working the program and I'm here tonight. Okay. Let's get this party started here. So I want to go ahead and start tonight with a prayer that's kept me sober for 2 years, and it's called the Serenity Prayer. And this prayer is really important to me. It goes like this. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And I'm going to tell you right now, that's all of you. I'm not changing any one of you tonight. God might work in your hearts, my higher power, not my higher power, your higher power might work in your heart to change you a little bit. But I can promise you this, I cannot keep anybody in here clean and sober tonight. I could just share what I've done, my experience, strength, and hope with you. The courage to change the things that I can. And I've learned that the courage to change the things that I can is just me. The only thing I could change in this world is me. And I'm not here to change you. But if you're here and you're willing to listen and to find a friend, you might be able to change yourself. And the wisdom to know the difference. And that part of that prayer has really kept me solid for a long time. But the prayer goes on. It goes on to living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as a pathway to peace, taking as he did this sinful world as it is, not as I would have it, trusting that he will make all things right if I surrender to his will so that I may be reasonably happy in this life and supremely happy with him forever and ever in the next. That tells me right here, I'm not meant to be a party boy all this year. I'm not meant to be living it up, living the dream every day. You know what? I just need to be content right now. And I need to live a I need to, to myself, I just need to kind of live a safe, sober life and do things that are healthy for me. My sponsor told me, why do you do shit that hurts you? I don't know. Why do I do shit that hurts me? And I found out I can choose. I can choose whether I'm going to do that stuff or I'm not going to do that stuff. And well, I'll get on to that in a minute here. But okay. I'm going to start with a little bit of my childhood. I was born in Hawaii. Aloha. And I was a surfer boy. I lived in Hawaii for many years. My family is a divorced family. They got divorced when I was in about second grade. We moved from Oregon to Washington, back to Oregon, back to Hawaii. I think I went to about 7 schools from the time I started school to the time I got into high school. And my life was a little chaotic. My parents at many times didn't like each other. There was alimony problems. There was drug problems. There was steps, and there was prostitutes. There was living homeless. Finally getting apartments with no furniture, no food, living off hot dogs and top ramen many, many, many months. And but you know what? I survived. And the problem was, with all that going on in my life, I never felt good enough. I never felt equal to the people around me in the world. And even my friends. I've had a lot of friends in my lifetime, but I was never as good as them. I didn't have as nice of cars as them. I wasn't as confident, or I wasn't as smart. I still remember, even down in third grade, there was this kid named Scott Nihei, and he had some beautiful handwriting, and I could never live up to that. And I was always behind in some way. And eventually I got to a point, I got to a point in my life in about, it was, gosh, I think I was in seventh grade or sixth grade, and my cousin just got back from Missouri. And, you know, it's almost Veterans Day, new president, and he discovered a beer called Red, White, and Blue. Well, Red, White, and Blue from Missouri, when you hide it in a car all the way back from Missouri to Oregon, gets pretty warm. And he did. And I got to go upstairs. We all hung out in the attic that night, and we played a game called Quarters. It was a fantastic game. And I lost, but I thought I won that night. As he continued to plop that quarter in the cup, continued over and over again, and I kept pounding that warm Red, White, and Blue beer just all night. At first, I was feeling sick, but as the night went on, I really started enjoying that beer. It was getting really good, really good. And by the end of the night, I still remember I kept on wanting to play. I remember them carrying me down the stairs in the attic, you know, those steeple ladder stairs, and they got me to the bathroom and got me back upstairs. And I just remember it was a fantastic night, and I fit in. I felt good around my cousins. I felt like I belonged with them, even though they went to Missouri and left me behind. And I had a great night until the next morning I woke up and I felt like I was going to die. My aunt dropped us off at the swimming pool, and I thought I was going to throw up the entire time in that pool, at the local public swimming pool. And so I didn't swim too much that day, but I do remember that hangover, and that hangover was horrendous. And we had to walk back to our house, like 3 miles back to our house. And I just remember dying the entire time with no money, no water. And we didn't have water bottles back then. It was like torture getting back there. That drink continued on until I turned 46. And I drank for many, many years in there. I drank through high school. I drank through college. always never feeling good enough, always never feeling as good as the other people, always looking for something else, always trying to find something better than what I had. You know, I went to University of Washington, great university, but the entire time there, I still didn't feel like I was good enough, or I wasn't smart enough, or fit in. Joined a fraternity there, a really good fraternity, because they were the ones that drank the hardest, and they reminded me of the movie Animal House. And we lived up to that expectation for 5 years. And I know it should have been done in 4, but I was on the 5-year mark. But that's okay, because I dropped all those classes, and I made it. I made it through, barely passing with about a 2.3, and leaving college having no idea what I was going to do with the rest of my life, having no idea. It was hard, and it was sad, because I was leaving my party, and at the time, I still really loved drinking, and it wasn't so horrible during that time. I met a few wonderful girls in college. One of them drank just like me, so I decided to move in with her. And the day we moved in together, she was gone. I was like, what the hell? I got out of the fraternity. I went in. I got some little furniture together. We got this little rental place together. And we moved in. She helped me put stuff in. And then she was gone for like a month. I had no idea where this girl went. Didn't call me. It was the day of the big giant cell phone, so there were cell phones around, but no word. And I was heartbroken. And I'm thinking to myself, why in the world did she leave me? This was a perfect relationship. We got drunk every weekend together. We got drunk almost every night together. We got drunk and met other people together. And I still wanted to marry this girl. And I didn't know. I didn't think that was a problem at the time. I met another girl in college after her, my little rebound there, and she was nice, sweet, kind of twinsies of the first important girl in my life. And it was the strangest thing, but I remember I was still in drinking mode, and she took me to this church or this building. It's all gray. And we walk into the room, and there's a circle of chairs in there. And I'm like, what the hell is this? And she was like, it's a meeting. This is what I go to. And I'm thinking to my, and she didn't drink. She had no alcohol in her. And I caught on that she was trying to give me some kind of help or something. She was fed up with my drinking. I would always be drunk around her. And you know, at that moment in my life, I was not willing to accept that room with that circle of chairs. And I didn't even go in. I let her go in, and I waited outside for her to finish her meeting that she needed really bad. At any rate, that relationship ended. And now I'm like, I am never going to meet the right girl. So I decided, you know what? Every time I drink, I meet the wrong girl. So what I decided to do was quit drinking. I quit. It was awesome. I quit drinking at the very last few months of college, my fifth year of college. And I didn't know what to do. Came back to Hawaii, and my dad gave me a job over there. And I was in Hawaii, sober, just completely depressed out of my mind. It was a horrible, dry, drunk experience for me of pure depression and sadness. And I didn't know what I was going to do with my life. I really didn't. I'm sitting on the beach at our beach house in front of the most beautiful scenery in the world. And I'm like, this sucks. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. Well, at any rate, one of my friends called me up and says, hey, Jimmy, you know what? You got to take me out. I got a girl, and we got to go to town. And so I'm like, no. And then he called me back, and he's drunk, and he's like, Jimmy, you got to take me to town, man. I got to impress this girl or do whatever with this girl. And so at any rate, I after he kept on calling me, I finally agreed to it. he was in the back seat with her the entire time to town. I'm like, dude, this sucks. This really sucks now. Now I'm in Hawaii. You got a girl. I got nothing. Well, at any rate, oddly enough, I was sober that night, and I went to town with this guy, and I met this amazing girl sober, and, this is the one. This was the one. In fact, she asked me out on my first date, and I married this girl, and fantastic. I was sober. I met the right girl, and then about 1 month in, I started drinking again. I got her. Woo! I was so thankful that I could start drinking again, because I finally got the right girl. Well, we got married in about 1994, and I was drinking pretty heavily at the time. We had a lot of fights over drinking. Years went on. I kept drinking, and eventually, drinking started turning its back on me. And up until about I turned 40, there was a lot of good drinking. There really was. I enjoyed the drink. And I enjoyed drinking with my friends and getting really, really wasted and drunk and blacking out. I love that stuff. As long as the next morning there was no problems for me and I'd wake up and I'd be okay. Well, after about 40, bad things started happening, and I would wake up not knowing what I did the night before. I would wake up and I'd look over at my wife and I'd be like, okay, I think it's okay this morning. I think I'm okay, because my head's throbbing. And then I'd say, hey, hon, how are you doing? And she'd be like, you effing dick, can you believe it? I'm like, oh, man. And I had no idea what I did the night before, because we didn't go anywhere. I was just in the house. And what can you do in a house that could offend you, your wife, and your family? Well, there were many, many, many nights like that. Many nights. I got to the point where I would keep my whiskey in the garage. I had little storage areas around. I kept my beer out back, especially during the winter. Right now, keep your beer by the garbage cans. It'll stay nice and cold all day. So I kept always a 12-pack out there. I kept a few bottles in the bottom of my refrigerator because she was okay with me just drinking a few. So, but those were my replacement bottles. So after I would drink one or pound a few, I would replace them immediately. And, I'd always have beer in there. And she'd say, have you been drinking tonight? As we pray together with the family, I'll say, no, honey, I had, you know what, I had one, I'm feeling it tonight, I'm a little bit tipsy tonight, and so I think she believed it, because I got away with that for quite a while, and that I know that was the beer or two, plus the bottle of whiskey, everything else that went along with my hiding of alcohol. I stored all my empty bottles behind my trash cans. I have three nice trash cans, and I have big black bottles, and I always thought that I'm going to recycle. I was good at recycling, so I thought I would recycle. Well, it got to a point where I had, like, you know, those big giant black garbage bags. I had like 10 back there, maybe 12. It was insane. It was going over the trash cans in the back. There was this, I was invited to an amazing wedding, and I got to go. It was like a $500,000 wedding on the golf course. Just immaculate. It was amazing. And that night I thought, you know what? I can't get drunk tonight. I can't get drunk. Up until this point, I knew that when I would drink, I would drink too much. I knew that when I would start, there was no end. I knew that when I came home in my car, my first thought was stopping by my liquor store called Save Mart and going in there with all my friends who sold me liquor every night. And I always thought, hey, they don't care that I'm in here every night. It's fine. And I always wondered, they don't even remember I bought a 12-pack last night. That's just sweet. And And now I'm just thinking, gosh, they must have known. When you go in there 4 or 5 times a week stocking up, unless I had a constant permanent party at my house, and, you know, I don't really look like much of a hardcore partier, but I did in college maybe. I don't know. At any rate, I knew that drinking would lead me to problems at that time. I just didn't know what to do about it. I did get a doctor, and he prescribed me some Xanax. I had to drive all the way to Fresno for that every month. I got a doctor, a counselor, who was helping me with my my problems. I did tell him I drank a beer or two once in a while. And I did seek God. I read the Bible. I wrote in a journal all my notes about God and learning. And you know what? I still had. I couldn't quite get that bug out of me, that drinking bug. I always thought I could solve it, but it didn't go away. There was moments where I could quit for a week, and then I'd start up again. I'll get to that in a second. But at any rate. I had this opportunity to go to this big wedding, and I told myself, I'm not going to drink tonight. I'm not drinking. I'm not. In fact, this is the coat I wore to the wedding right here. This is the same coat. I haven't bought a new coat since then. It's probably got, it might have the smell of the wedding on it still. I don't know. And I get to this wedding. I decided I got to calm down a little bit, so I took 4 Xanax before the wedding just to make sure that I'm calm enough around everybody in the world that I hate, that I'll be okay at this wedding where I had tons of fear going into it because I'd have to talk to people and I don't like people at the time. And so I get to the wedding and I have to use the bathroom. So I go around the corner to use the bathroom, and the groom's there with his groom party. I don't know what you call that. All the guys in the wedding are there, and they go, "Hey, Uncle Jim, come and grab a beer." And I'm like, "Yeah, I can't say no to a beer." So I grab a beer and I drink it with the guys, and they all take off back to the wedding. And I'm like, man, I'm thirsty. That's when I got thirsty, right at that moment. And this is the wedding that I swore I would not drink, and I'm all prepared, you know, I'm numb already to the world on my Xanax. And right next door is, there's a little hole in the wall golf thingy right there. I don't play golf, but there's a full bar in this little golf hut thing. And I go, I'll grab another beer. 2 beers, not going to be a problem. 2 beers, I always can handle 2 beers. Well, we went to the wedding on the night I promised I wouldn't drink. We had a nice wedding, and I'm just sitting there thinking, I need a drink. This is just hard. And we get inside at this beautiful place, and in all honesty, as soon as I walked in the door, I met a guy named Rick Evans, and he was smiling at me and welcomed me with a big hug. And I'm like, wow, this guy's so cool. He was just so friendly and nice, and he seemed happy, and he seemed thankful that I was even there. It was the oddest thing. Just for some reason, I remember meeting him, and I've never known him before, ever. Never met this guy. And I still remember him to this day, walking in the door with my family, and hey. Well, at any rate, right behind him was the most amazing bar that I've ever seen. And it was all free and all paid for. Every liquor you could possibly imagine. Now, see, I'm a liquor scientist. One of my rules for liquor is you never drink beer and whiskey together, or wine. You always make sure it's pure and clean. I got to a point in drinking my whiskey that the Coke was bad for it. That would give me a hangover. And it's in my garage, so I can't really go get cups of ice. So I just thought, I can keep paper cups in the garage and just pour it up and take shots. And, you know, and I would definitely make sure that I didn't drink too much. I'd take my Sharpie out there in my garage and mark just enough to where exactly. I knew my drink. I knew my drink, and I knew how to survive where I wouldn't be hung over the next day so I could function the next day. And I got in there, and I saw that bar, and I drank everything imaginable. It was like a rainbow. unicorn princess fairy bar. Just, I had to have it all. It was fantastic. And I don't even drink vodka. Vodka. Whiskey's my drink. So I get over there and this lady looks at me and goes, "Have you ever tried this vodka drink?" And I'm like, "No, let's do it." So that was my first drink. And then after that, the night started blurring out. I remember sneaking away from my table and going to the open bar where the dance was. And then I remember, there was all these bottles of wine on the table, and I thought, this is great. So you just grab wine, you could drink all the wine on the table too. And then I woke up that night. And after my two beers, it was just two beers, I just had two beers, and I woke up, and my in-laws are all surrounding me, and they come over to me, and they say, "Hey, no, they don't do that." They said, "You got a problem, and you need to leave." This is my mother and sister-in-law, this is her daughter's wedding, and I go, "F you, bitch. I don't have a problem." Or "You've got a problem." I don't remember it, but there was an F and there was a B in there. And I woke up. I was like, oh. And I saw them in front of me. Like, I don't know where they were all night. I had no idea where anybody was that night. I really don't. And at that moment, I realized, oh man. And I was like, hey, I don't got a problem. Well, at any rate, they told me to leave. And they escorted me out with my brother-in-law. And he took me home, and I'm bawling. I'm just crying. And nobody understands me. Nobody gets me. I have a hard life. I was telling him the whole sob story. He was like, I don't give a shit. He really was. He didn't care. The next morning, I'm sorry. I got home that night. My wife came in. Kids came in. We were fighting. We were arguing. There was pushing. No hitting, thank God. My son walked out with his gun, and it looked like he wanted to shoot me. And they all left that night. They all left. I remember that. I don't know what happened the rest of the night. I think I drank that night. And then I woke up the next morning not knowing what had happened. I really didn't. I was like, oh man. And I looked over in bed, and my wife wasn't there. So I'm like, oh no. Damn. And I go out into the house, and nobody's there. The house is cold, empty. Kids are gone. And I'm like, man, I must have really screwed something up last night. And the phone rings a little while later, and my niece calls, and she goes, "Hey, Uncle Jim, how you doing?" And I'm like, I have a bad hangover. And she goes, "How'd it go last night?" And I'm like, oh shit, I was still sad. About this niece, she's in the program, you see, and she can look at me as a drunk and just laugh along with me. She was so bright and positive, and just I was so scared to talk to her because I knew she was in AA. And she says, "Uncle Jim, I'm going to pick you up tonight, and I'm going to take you to a meeting, and we're going to meet some people." And I'm just like, oh, all right, my family's not here. I don't know what to do. You got it. Well, I went to an AA meeting that night. 20 years before that, I was invited to one, but I wouldn't walk in the door. It took me, from college to 2 years ago. It took me that long to actually want to walk in an AA door. Prior to then, I would have never wanted to go into AA just because of the image that it has around it. You know, the image of drunks and hobos and homeless people living, you know, and wandering into a meeting and dragging their whatever's in. That was my image growing up. I had no idea that it was just people. It was just human beings here, trying to find something. I got to that meeting, and I'm going to have to hurry up here. And I gotta share this. We shared it tonight. And at this point, I got to that meeting. I just thought I'd get my wife off my back. I was going to do this thing so I could get my family back like usual. I have been kicked out of the house on many occasions. I have been kicked out of our family trailer many times and slept in the car. There's been so many times my wife has forgiven me and let me back into her life. I just thought, no problem. I could do it again. I'm going to go to the meeting. She'll let me back in a week, maybe a few days. At any rate, I heard this at the meeting. Drinking beer only. I tried that so many times. Limiting the number of drinks. I would measure my bottles and count my beers. Never drinking alone. I tried that. I'd go to parties. But as soon as I'd go to a party and have a drink with a friend, I had to go drink more back at home again, because that was never enough. Never enough. Never drinking in the morning. Well, that's true, unless it was the weekend or vacations and summer vacation, because I'm a teacher. So I had all summer to drink in the morning. It was good. Drinking only at home. I tried that, but once you start drinking, it doesn't help. Never having it in the house. I kept it in the garage. I tried it where I never bought it, but as soon as I'd go to a party and I'd be offered a beer, I'd be back on immediately again. Never drinking during business hours. You know, I didn't drink it at work, but I sure was hungover on many, many days. And I was, you know, just feeling still drunk. So I officially don't count that as drinking during business hours, but some people might. Drinking only at parties. Tried the parties. Switching from scotch to brandy. I tried the beer and the wine and the, I tried the whiskey. I tried vodka, but, oh, man, that stuff is, it's hard on my stomach. So I'd go back to the whiskey again. But I tried drink jumping all the time. Drinking only natural wines. You know, that's in the Bible, and Jesus did it. That can't be bad for you. But when you drink, when you go to Save Mart, you buy the two big bottles, you know, I don't know, 1.5 liters or something like that. That has a good effect on you. I'm not sure if you drink that much. Drinking only natural wines. Agreeing to resign if ever drunk on the job. No way. I would fight that till the end. Taking a trip. I tried that. Not taking a trip. Swearing off forever. I swore off. I am not going to do this again. I'm not stopping in Save Mart. I won't do this again. And year after year after year, it just would creep back up on me, and I'd be right back there again, getting kicked out of the house again. Taking more physical exercise. I shared this. I used to drink and then go run because I wanted to burn off the calories of the drink. Reading inspirational books. I read Anthony Robbins, read the Bible. I love those self-help books. Those were good books. All the Bible study books that I went to. This is it. I'm going to join a new Bible study. I'm done. And I'm not saying that church doesn't work for some people. But for me, it did not work. And I didn't get it. I was like, God, I'm going to Bible study. I go to church. I teach the children at church. What's going on? So I just came to a kind of a point where I'm like, maybe God just wants me to drink. Taking more physical exercise, reading, going to health farms and sanitariums. I had the psychologist, I had the counselors, and I had the doctors trying to help me with all my problems, but they didn't. None of that worked. That first meeting did, though. When I got to that meeting, I met people and I met friends, and I finally fit in. I finally got to a point where I'm like, wow, this is where I belong. I am with a bunch of the most normal people I've ever met in my life. And this is the honest truth. When I got to rooms, you were like heaven sent angels to me that I needed bad, because everybody outside that door was screwed up. Everybody in the world was screwed up. My family, my wife's family, everybody at work, they had no idea. They were really, really, really messed up. And at that meeting, I conceded after reading all those things. I did check, 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 check. I'm an alcoholic. And that was the moment I said, I better stay here. Because up until that point, I had no idea. From that point on, my life has never, it's never been better. I feel fulfilled. I have friends. I have a I guess a purpose in life. I've got my relationship back with God. I've got my family back. We're still rebuilding, don't get me wrong. Getting your family back sometimes is really, really hard. There's a lot of anger and some still reoccurring resentments in there that I try not to psychoanalyze my family for, because I realize that they don't have the drinking problem. I have the drinking problem, and I needed to be the one to fix myself, because it's not my solution. Alcohol never worked. My thinking was so messed up that I thought alcohol was the only way that I could get you out of my mind. I could get the world out of my mind. I could feel better when I was drinking. And I found out that that solution did not work for me. In fact, it stopped working for me many, many years ago. I got a sponsor. I worked the steps. I'm still working the steps. I said the Serenity Prayer every single day, as much as, because I would still be, even after I was sober, people would piss me off every day. I was in the program for a few months, and I went to Walmart, and I tried to park my big car, squeeze in by this lady, and she got so pissed off. She was just cussing, "You effing of a fat." And I was like, "Wow, I'm gonna get out, and I'm gonna tell her, you know, how to be respectful to people parking at Walmart." Well, like. Yeah, so at any rate, I gave a little prayer before I got out, and I got out of my car, and I walked over to her, and I was just freaking ready to just, and I said, "I'm sorry." And I have no idea where that came from. It was like a miracle came out of my mouth, and her friend standing next to her goes, "Thank you, we forgive you." And I'm like, "Holy cow, this program works." So I kept coming back. I'm still sober today. I've got friends. I got my family. And I owe it all. I owe everything to AA. That room that I didn't want to walk in with my girlfriend back in college, I wish there was... I probably shouldn't wish, but my life might have changed if I walked into that door that day. And but I wasn't ready. I wasn't ready. I wanted to keep drinking, and I guess I needed to find my sobriety here in Visalia, California, on November 9th, 2014. And I'm Jim, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you.